experience of Anil Kumar, sir. In a discourse, I remember reading where Swami says that the mind is a cat. You will see that when the cat carries the kitten, it carries it so tenderly. But that doesn't mean that it doesn't have sharp teeth. When necessary, it can chew the life out of a rat, out of a mouse. And Swami says that whether you want the tenderness of a cat or you want the viciousness of the cat is totally dependent on you. And Swami said that if you engage yourself in thinking of God, you'll become like the kitten.
Mm-hmm.
The mind will not harm you. The mind will always take care of you tenderly. That is what happens when you engage in thinking of God.
Right. There's another very beautiful analogy about this mind dwelling on different things and how you deal with that. I think only Swami can give such sweet analogies. Now, he says that a mother takes a child to the market, a three-year-old, a four-year-old child. And Swami said this four-year-old child does not have any discrimination of how much money the mother has in the purse or what are the things it can desire for. It gets attracted to everything. It goes from one stall to the other, running all over the place. So Swami was telling that the mother, you know, does not always hold on to the child and say that, no, don't go there, don't see this. The mother does not say that. The mother actually allows the child to look at everything and probably desire everything also. But Swami was saying that sometimes the mother, what she does is, she does not bother about where the child is going. She just keeps walking. So after some time, you know, the child sees that it cannot get the attention of the mother anymore, so it stops looking at the things which is looking at and follows the mother. Swami says sometimes to deal with this working mind, this is what you have to do. Don't give it too much importance by even restraining it. Just let it be as it is.
Don't try to control
it.
Right,
and you carry on. But one thing which I'd probably mention is many of these examples, Swami would not give in an open discourse for very good reason, because again, the reason is the mind. Because the mind has one beautiful or dangerous thing which it does, which is
convenient philosophy.
It can take any philosophy and suit it to what it's already doing and not change its ways. That's why Swami would be very careful of not giving any of these analogies in a public discourse, because publicly you have to be very strict with what your, you know, stance is. But when you're struggling with all of these strict rules which Swami gives, Swami, you know, then comes down to, you know, a motherly approach, and Swami says that this is how you have to deal with it. But if Swami were to say it upfront, the mind will, you know.
Correct. It's always easier to loosen something than to tighten something.
Right.
So keep something tight and then loosen it and depending upon the situation.
Right.
Give exceptions. So that is about the manas or the working mind. And as we said, when there are decisions to be taken, when there are choices to be made, that is where the second function of the mind as the buddhi comes in. The buddhi is called the intellect. And just like we said that for the manas, instant gratification or pain avoidance is the mandate, the buddhi is the rational decision maker. It is going to take all the data available, convert it into information, then weigh the pros and cons and come out with the logical decision. So while it's very clear and easy to understand how the buddhi is definitely one level higher than the manas, we should also keep in mind that the buddhi or the intellect is limited by the amount of input it has got and the kind of input that it has got. So that is the plus and the minus of the buddhi. Because the buddhi, I feel, you know, it takes its decisions just like judges in a court. And when the lawyers are fighting, most probably the basis of the decision that the judge takes is based on some previous case. In the 1962, someone versus someone, this is what had happened and therefore this. But in 1964, the same thing had happened, but then this had happened. So based on all the past judgments, the current judgment is given. That is how the buddhi functions. And that is the positive as well as the negative. While it has a logical precedent, it need not be the most ideal. I would like to just give one small example. You know, I remember there was a time when I was studying 11th standard in higher secondary school, when Swami would often look at me and tell, he needs to be admitted to the mental hospital. And I used to, what you referred to. And I used to feel very happy at that time, because it didn't matter what Swami said. As long as Swami is saying something, it's great. And that used to be a great source of joy for me, that every now and then he keeps telling I have to be in the mental hospital. It was in that phase that an incident happened where it was the biology exam. I was sitting and studying for it. And I saw, you know, some of the boys playing around with a hose. They were hosing each other with water and running around. It was so fun, and I think my manas naturally got attracted, because it gets attracted to pleasure. I really wanted to go and play. At that time, you know, the buddhi knows this much based on the past experience and everything, that if you don't study, you're going to mess the exam tomorrow, so you better sit and study. So the buddhi is telling me to study, but the manas is pulling me to play. I went and started playing with them. I found it very hard to obey the buddhi over the manas, and when it happened multiple times, I thought of involving a higher power, and that's why I said, Swami, I promise you that if I don't read two chapters, I won't have lunch today. I thought I will deprive my manas of another pleasure that it seeks, because I love food. And that is what I made a promise to Swami. But even in spite of the promise, I could not hold back. I went and played. And finally, when the bell rang, I felt, oh my God, you know, this is gone now. I have made a promise and I have not read those two chapters. Honestly speaking, at that point in time, two voices came. You know, two voices are speaking. And really, both of them made a lot of logical sense. And I could not really make out who is right, who is wrong. You know, one voice is saying that you have learned your lesson now. You go quickly have your food, sit and study intensely. The other one is saying, no, you should not have your food now. The first voice again says, what was the reason behind the promise? It's not like Swami wants you to study or anything like that. You want to study. So all the things that you are doing is focused on you wanting to study. Now if you are hungry, when you are hungry you can't. You know, even Swami Vivekananda said, don't teach spirituality to a hungry man. I would like to broaden it by saying, don't teach anything to a hungry man. Because when you are hungry, your brain just doesn't work. So both voices are looking very concerned towards me. This voice is saying, don't eat food. The other voice is saying, no, you go and eat food. And finally, you know, guess what? I listen to the voice that